Stay tuned after the show for a message from Nokia.
So what we've seen in primaries basically since the coronavirus pandemic started is just been disaster after disaster after disaster. Perhaps no more disastrous, to use the same word over and over again, than what happened in Georgia.
Voters in Georgia encountered major problems at the polls during Tuesday's primary. Many waited in line for hours due to a shortage of workers and issues with new voting machines.
Thousands waited hours to cast ballots, and frustration was evident.
Please, God, help us!
Lines in Atlanta stretching for blocks, some standing in the rain, forced to wait hours to cast a ballot.
I expect to see these long lines popping up again in New York and again in Kentucky that we saw in Georgia, that we saw in Milwaukee in Wisconsin, that we saw in Washington, D.C., that we've seen in basically every primary that's happened in a pandemic, and it doesn't seem like anyone's figured it out yet.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch, and today, as voters get ready for big primaries in New York and Kentucky on Tuesday, are we in for more hours and hours and hours of lines and another disaster at the polls?
So what we saw in Georgia is that the Secretary of State there sent everyone an absentee ballot request form. So anyone who wanted to vote absentee could. And a lot of people took advantage of that. But in-person voting, which is handled on the county level with some supervision by the Secretary of State, in-person voting was disastrous in and around Atlanta. And when I say that, I mean that there were lines of 5 or 6 hours long. That is just untenable in regular circumstances if there wasn't a pandemic, but you're asking people to stand out in these lines, surrounded by other people, in these incredibly long lines in the middle of a pandemic, putting their health at risk. And we heard from a lot of voters, both in Georgia and then basically any election that happened prior to that too, who requested an absentee ballot form and didn't actually receive one. My name is Zach Montalero. I'm a campaign reporter here at Politico, and I write our Morning Score newsletter. The real question is, can New York and Kentucky get this right on Tuesday? Unfortunately, I think the answer will probably be no. From what we've heard so far, we've heard that things in New York have gone more or less the same way, that people requested absentee ballots, and a lot of people are getting them, certainly. The majority of people are getting the ballots who requested one, but tens of thousands aren't getting their ballots. They have to go vote in person. And then Kentucky, same thing there. A lot of people are going to be voting absentee, voting over the mail. But the number of in-person polling places is just drastically lower than it is usually. There's usually about 3,700 polling places across the state. We're down to about 200 in Kentucky. So let's wait to see what happens on Tuesday. Maybe, hopefully, I'll be proven wrong. Hopefully, everything goes smoothly. There's no lines. Everyone feels comfortable voting in person. The safety protocols are all good. But if the past elections are any sign for what's going to come on Tuesday and what could potentially come in November, more importantly, this is not going to go well.
You're reporting that it could be days, if not a week, until we know the results from both of these states, too. Why is that?
I don't expect any results to come out of Kentucky or New York or any real definitive results for at least a week. So in Kentucky, unless the race is a huge blowout, we're probably not going to get results because the two largest counties in Kentucky said they're not releasing any results, they're not releasing any in-person results until all the absentee ballots are counted. And some of those are expecting it'll take a week, so we might not find out a winner in Kentucky until the 30th. And in New York, it's even more drastic than that. They'll probably release in-person votes as they come in New York, and at least most counties in the city, upstate, on Long Island. But in New York, you can't even start counting absentee ballots until a week after the election, because in New York, they double check, make sure that the person who submitted absentee ballot didn't vote in person. Normally, that's not a problem in New York. Normally, 4 or 5% of people vote absentee, if that high. So that's not that many people doing it, unless it's an incredibly close race, a couple hundred votes, a couple thousand votes. It doesn't really matter. But now, when we could see anywhere from 30 to 50% or maybe even higher than that, we don't really know, vote absentee in New York, that means that there won't be any really definitive winners for at least a week until they start counting those ballots. They actually have to count them and certify them. So weeks could go by before we see winners in these really, really hotly contested primaries.
Let's dig into these races themselves a little bit, starting with Kentucky. What are voters deciding on in Kentucky on Tuesday, and why is it important?
The big race to watch in Kentucky on Tuesday is the Democratic Senate primary. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is up for re-election, and Democrats always want to take him out. And for most of the cycle, it seemed like Amy McGrath was the candidate that Democrats were rallying around.
Some are telling me a Democrat can't win that battle in Kentucky, that we can't take back our country for my kids and yours. We'll see about that.
She was backed by the DSCC, which is the National Party Senate arm. She is just an absurd fundraiser. Like, I can't even put into words how much money she raises. And then slowly but surely, this state representative, Charles Booker, has caught fire.
As protesters called for justice for Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and others, Charles Booker has been there with them.
I think it's lit a spark that is inspiring a lot of people to believe that we need new leadership, and now's the time to elect a young black man from the poorest zip code in Kentucky.
Charles Booker is the progressive favorite in this race. He has the endorsement of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of Senator Bernie Sanders. But the interesting thing about him, too, is that people in the state, you know, Kentucky politicians in the state, both progressives and of the more moderate Democrats or whatever you want to call them, have kind of rallied around Booker. And no one really saw this coming, honestly. If you asked me even 2 months ago, does Charles Booker have a shot of beating Amy McGrath? I'd say no way. And that's what we're really watching for there, is can this late surge kind of push Charles Booker past Amy McGrath? It'd be a huge victory for the progressive movement if they do that. Now, no matter who wins, no matter which Democrat wins, Mitch McConnell is still the favorite to win. Kentucky is still, after all, a red state. I think it's pretty comfortably can say that Mitch McConnell is not in a toss-up category, not even the lean category, probably, you know, a likely Republican seat just because it's such a red state. But even knocking off Amy McGrath is a big victory for progressives if they can do it.
So the other election people are keeping a close eye on is New York. And we're kind of seeing a similar situation play out there, right?
Yeah. So in New York, there's challenges across the board, but the one that has really attracted the most outside attention and the most national attention has been the one in New York 16. That's where longtime Representative Elliot Engel is facing a really, really spirited primary challenge from Jamal Bowman. Jamal Bowman was a middle school principal who was aligned with the progressive wing of the party, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's, the Bernie Sanders, the Working Families parties of the world. And he's run a really diligent, really smart, really strong campaign. You know, this one's really anyone's guess at this point. It's attracted millions of dollars of outside spending, not something you normally see for a primary challenge. But this is a real challenge to a longtime entrenched incumbent in New York. And it'll be really interesting to see who actually wins this one.
What do you think both of these races and the possible voting nightmares going along with them can tell us about the political situation we're in and can tell us about upcoming elections?
I think right now what we need to learn is election officials need to figure out how to hold an election in a pandemic. And right now, across the country, no one's figured that out. People need to be able to vote safely in person. A lot of people take advantage of voting in person, even in the middle of a pandemic. And a lot of people take advantage of voting by mail. We're going to see a real switch this cycle to a lot of people voting by mail, but in-person voting still needs to be safe and a realistic option. And right now, no one has figured that out. These primaries are a dry run, certainly for November, but many, many less people vote in a primary than in November. So they need to figure out how the heck this is going to work, what they can learn from these lessons, what they can take away from happening on Tuesday and apply forward to November. And the other thing that I'm looking with that too is that this not knowing the results immediately, that's a real possibility for November. It's entirely possible, if not likely, we go to bed on November 3rd and we don't know who the president of the United States is. We don't know who controls the Senate. We don't know who controls the House. That's a real possibility. And that's happened in primaries pretty frequently, that we don't know the winner on election night. And it could happen in November. And then what it means for the progressive movement too, what these races are saying, the primary challenge in New York 16, Charles Booker's insurgent challenge to Amy McGrath, is that Tuesday's a real make or break moment for progressives. If they get these big wins, if Jamal Bowman beats Elliot Engel, if they pick up these two open seats in New York 15 and 17, if they can pick off another primary challenge too, because it's not just Engel facing a primary challenge, it's other people in New York City who have to contend with this, it's a huge night. It's a big night. If none of that happens, if Charles Booker loses and progressives just get shut out in New York City, that's a real blow. That's a huge blow. Some of these districts neighbor Representative Ocasio-Cortez's districts. If they can't win in the neighboring districts, they can't win in New York City, which has been long, long-standing, you know, base of progressive support. That's where the Working Families Party is based. How are they going to win in other places in the country? So I think this is a big moment for them, too.
Zach Montalero, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Also today, new fundraising numbers show that while Joe Biden is still trailing President Trump in cash, he's catching up. According to FEC filings released over the weekend, in May, Biden and the Democratic National Committee brought in more than $80 million, hitting an all-time monthly fundraising record. Compare that to Trump and the Republican National Committee, which together raised $74 million over the same period. Even still, Trump has a good deal more cash on hand than Biden. He's been able to jointly fundraise with the Republican Party at higher levels as the party's nominee for months, and has $265 million on hand compared to Biden's $122.2 million. It's notable, though, that May was the first full month Biden raised money with the DNC in a joint agreement that allows individual donors to give more than $620,000. The new numbers also give some insight into spending, with the Trump team dropping about $46.5 million during the month, compared to some $24.1 million from Democrats. Both candidates, as you might expect, saw a big drop in spending on travel. And President Trump is set to extend foreign worker restrictions enacted at the end of April due to the coronavirus pandemic through the end of the year. According to two people familiar with the discussion, Trump plans to expand on the executive order blocking most people from receiving a green card by including most guests who come to the U.S. for temporary work, including skilled workers in specialty occupations, executives, and seasonal workers in industries like landscaping, housing, and construction. Agricultural workers and students will not be included. Trump's first executive order, signed in April, is set to expire today. It's unclear whether he plans to sign one or two additional orders, but the move indicates that the president will try to make immigration a focus of his re-election campaign, just like in 2016. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts, and check out some of our other shows like Politico Energy, Women Rule, Nerdcast, and Pulse Check. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Now more than ever, strong and secure connections are critical to the nation's success. That's why Nokia powers the connections that keep our country strong. And we're doing it all here from America. With 10,500 direct jobs and nearly half of our global procurement spent in the U.S., Nokia empowers our country to help American business stay in business. Learn more at nokia.com/opentomore.